My name is Christoph Korshain from the Conservation Law Foundation.
For starters, could you remind our listeners what is the governor's initiative on energy infrastructure?
Sure. The governor's in January proposed a plan that would involve billions of dollars in customer money going to finance the construction of gas pipelines and electric transmission lines. And that plan was proposed in January in a letter to the regional grid, and it's been in discussion since then.
And why exactly are they proposing this? Why is this thought to be needed?
The perceived need that is driving this plan is that the region has winter problems with gas supply, and we experience these price spikes during the winter period, where electric prices go very high, and there's concerns that the power plants that are an increasing portion of our energy mix do not have the gas to run during those winter periods. And so the intent is to bring more gas into the region in very large quantities and to get the customers, the electric customers, to pay for that gas pipeline to be constructed.
So a few months ago, the Conservation Law Foundation did a right-to-know request asking for some documents involved in the creation of this initiative. So what did you find in that right-to-know request?
We actually made six right-to-know requests to the different states, not only New Hampshire, but also the other New England states, and to the agency that is really implementing the plan, which is the New England States Committee on Electricity, which is where all the states come together. And we've gotten some documents back, a lot of documents from New Hampshire and Maine, very few documents from the other states, no documents from the New England States Committee on Electricity. And we've been analyzing the documents and reviewing them, and the results of that review are, quite frankly, stunning, troubling, pick your adjective. We see evidence that there's a general hostility to really any public involvement in the process. It's a very insider process. And we also see that they are inviting some people to the party. They're inviting the pipeline companies and the large gas and electric utilities who are really stand to profit mightily from this plan. They want roles as middlemen, managing different parts of the plan, and certainly the pipeline companies and the transmission companies want the money to build their projects and get their returns. And so we see extensive influence in the documents of these companies really being invited in to closed-door discussions with state officials. And what we see coming out of those discussions is, you know, a set of proposals that, not surprisingly, are very heavily oriented towards the big infrastructure that these companies want to build.
This cozy relationship that you describe, it's, you know, it's certainly troubling, but it's also not new. In a lot of industries that are complicated, like the energy industry, it's not uncommon for the regulators and the regulatees to be the same people, because the expertise required mean that there's often this sort of revolving door. So in this case, isn't it not unusual that the regulators would open up the process to the stakeholders who are, in fact, the people who will be benefiting from this money?
The difference in this case, Sam, is that in many of these industry discussions, the issues are fairly small and technical. In this case, we're talking about billions of customer dollars into major infrastructure that has major public impacts on real people. And the process is essentially excluding those people. And that's a big problem. When we're making big decisions about what is effectively a tax that all electric customers in the region are going to have to pay, and that will have long-lasting implications for our economy, for the environment, for a whole range of interests, the idea that that process has been essentially done behind closed doors and with substantial input from the industries that stand to benefit is a pretty big cause for concern for ordinary customers and certainly those who care about the environmental impacts of the infrastructure.
And getting to the environmental impact, your complaint seems to be that the NESCO process has ruled out some alternatives that the Conservation Law Foundation thinks would have less environmental impact and perhaps still have returns. So what are those alternatives?
Well, the key part of figuring out what the alternatives are, what is the problem that we're trying to solve? And what we have in the region is a problem that is limited to a certain number of days per year. It's a kind of peak winter problem. And the best way to address that would be to start with the smaller, cheaper things. So there are lots of things you can do to get the electric market and the gas market to sync up better. Those are very small cost, but they eliminate some of those needle peak price spikes that you see. And there are also ways to strategically deploy things like liquefied natural gas, which doesn't have as much of a role in this discussion. But a number of the market participants who could offer that service are coming in and saying, we can do this for much cheaper than building a multi-billion dollar pipeline across the region in a greenfield environment. So it seems to make sense to use some of these more flexible solutions that are cheaper. Of course, we haven't even talked about we could deal with efficiency on the gas side as well as efficiency on the electric side. Because if the system is much more efficient, we are not going to have as much electric demand. We're not going to have as much gas demand. And one of the most egregious problems with this state process is that they actually did an analysis of something called the low demand scenario. If we actually capture more energy efficiency, including in New Hampshire, we only capture really 1/10 of what the studies show are all cost effective energy efficiency, as you well know. And if we took measures to make some investment in those areas, those investments would be much smaller in scale, but provide the benefit of reducing those winter price spikes and reducing the wholesale price impacts, which ultimately do impact consumers in a muted way. And we would be solving our problems in a way that would be better for the environment, but most importantly, more cost-effective for customers.
So what would you say to critics? I mean, there are big challenges apart from just these winter price spikes in the region. There's, a number of coal plants that are set to or expected to retire. There's, homeowners who are switching from heating oil to natural gas. And, of course, there's the need to reduce carbon emissions in the face of the challenge of climate change. So what would you say to a critic who told you not only do we need the things that you're talking about, what we also need two or three major transmission lines connecting us to hydropower in Quebec and the less carbon-intensive natural gas flowing in to replace coal and heating oil?
I think the challenge is getting the solutions of the right size and scale. So certainly there is a need to replace the retiring fossil fuel fleet, which is a large number of thousands of megawatts of really the last generation of power plants that are coming off the system in the next few years. We realize that those units need to be replaced by power. Now, the question is, how much power do you need and who's going to pay for it? And the answer the governors are coming up with is that all the ratepayers should be making a bet on big infrastructure that really is not going to pay off for many years to come in terms of the savings that are being discussed. It's a lot of cost up front, big projects, big impacts. If we took a more incremental approach and we look at some of the things we can do with existing infrastructure, we can increase flows over the transmission lines that currently exist from Canada. They aren't necessarily full much of the year. We can better use our gas infrastructure, and there are small upgrade projects that we could do that would allow more gas to flow into the region. So there's really no objection to the idea that we need to solve a set of problems. The question is how you do it and how much is it going to cost. And what we see is a rush to judgment that the best way to do this is to really spend up to $10 billion in big new infrastructure that has been, you know, that hasn't been carefully and rigorously analyzed. And that, in fact, there's a substantial risk we'll be overinvesting in this infrastructure when we could meet that need with smaller bites of the apple.
Christoph, thanks very much.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure.